Well, today's exercise probably always was going to be the shortest lab of the term. But then we got reading it a little more closely, and now it's even shorter because we didn't realize that it was written before for you to puncture yourselves. I don't know how they got away with doing that earlier without a... You got to have a protocol in place to be able to injure yourself in the lab, so we can't do that. Where you're not using your own blood, don't do that. So that means the revised... My to-do list is no longer exactly right, but I told you these will always be sitting out anyway. So the ones that are sitting out right now are revised, a little shorter. We've taken out a little bit of stuff. That doesn't mean we're not going to do any typing, though. We're just going to use a kit that mimics the process without actually using your own blood. So that's just about all of this is review, I think. Not only is it short because you don't have all that much stuff to look at, but considering what we've already done in lecture, it should pretty much be review. Let's quickly go over some stuff, though, that we've already talked about in lecture. What are the two major subdivisions of leukocytes? Granulocytes and agranulocytes, right? And without looking, do you remember which ones are the granulocytes? Basophils, neutrophils, eosinophils. And what are the basis of those names? Why are they named that? The kinds of things that make them stain well, exactly. Basophils stain well with basic dye, meaning alkaline, not uncomplicated. That's basic meaning alkaline, not acidic. Acidic dye does well for which ones? Eosinophils, but they're called that rather than calling them acidophils. They're called eosinophils because eosin is the particular dye that is acidic that stains them very well. And that's what makes them reddish orange if eosin is used. By the way, leukocytes aren't always that color. They're no color naturally, of course. But these are not the only stains that can be used, and therefore they could be different colors in different books, different photographs, which is why you shouldn't just memorize them based on color. You should look at their shapes. The granules and the nuclei particularly are what really give them away. And then the neutrophils aren't stained better as acidic or basic, and therefore they're neutral. All right, what are the agranulocytes? Monocytes and lymphocytes, exactly. And there are several kinds of lymphocytes. What are the three main ones I mentioned today? B lymphocytes, T lymphocytes, and what does NK stand for? Natural killer cells, yes. But then they have their own subdivisions, which is beyond what we're looking at today. Okay, speaking of monocytes, what do they become? Macrophages. And what do macrophages do, as the name implies? Well, they do kill, but how do they kill things? Phagocytosis, exactly. It's really just looking at stuff today, including that poster. That poster is a good view of photographs of each of the kind. I think all five kinds are represented in there. Pay, like I said, particular attention to the shape of the nuclei. And these are weird nuclei compared to most cells, right? They're multi-lobed. So it might look like there are separate nuclei in some of these leukocytes, but what you're really seeing are separate lobes of one nucleus that does have a connection point between them. In certain samples, the connection point, the membrane that connects them, because it's all one nuclear envelope covering all of it, but that connection point can be so thin that you won't even see it with a microscope. So it gives the impression that it's multinucleate, but they're really not. What is it, by the way, that gives rise to platelets? What are they called? Mega meaning big. What is huge in the type of cell that gives rise to platelets? Well, the cell itself is huge, but what inside? What conspicuous organelle inside the cell is huge? No. Lysosomes are the conspicuous granules in eosinophils. Yeah, they're called megakaryocytes, so it's the nucleus that's big. Remember, carion, as a combining form, means nucleus. It means kernel, literally, which refers to the core, or the seed. The main part of the cell is the nucleus. That's why that's the basis for eukaryote, which means true nucleus, and prokaryote, which means before the nucleus evolved. Okay, it's megakaryocytes that give rise to platelets, and therefore megakaryocytes are not found in the blood, even though they're cells that arise from the process of blood cell production, right? What is that process called? Hemopoiesis, right. And it all starts with what kind of cell? Yes, it is a stem cell, but there's all kinds of different stem cells. You can call it different things, but what are the various names? Well, what is the word that means, that refers to stem cells that are able to develop into just a limited number of different things, rather than all different kinds of cells? That's pluripotent. The potent part of that word refers to their ability to turn into different things. So if a stem cell is able to turn into every kind of cell in the body, which you have very early on in embryonic development, that's called a totipotent cell, meaning totally potent, basically, able to turn into everything. But that's not the case for these marrow cells that give rise to blood, right? They're able to turn into different things, and therefore they qualify as stem cells, but they're only able to make blood cells and megakaryocytes. Whether you classify megakaryocytes as blood cells, you really shouldn't. But I mean, those are the only things that these pluripotent stem cells are able to make. But even more, pluripotent refers to other things besides these ones, so an even more specific name for them would be what? Hemopoietic stem cells, yes. And so what are the kinds of cells that hemopoietic stem cells directly make? That's not direct, though. That's the end of the line. Erythrocytes is one of their products at the end of the line. But by then, the stem cell is no longer... I mean, the cells that make erythrocytes directly are not stem cells. The hemopoietic stem cell directly makes what kinds of cells? Colony-forming units. Right? So there's erythrocyte colony-forming units, and there's all kinds of different white blood cell colony-forming units, eosinophilic colony-forming units, and so on. Those are the ones that actually go on, according to signals that they receive from other white blood cells, to proliferate. Proliferation just means increase in number. So they undergo mitosis over and over, make a lot of that version. All right, and then let's quickly go over the ABO system again so it makes sense when you're doing this typing. What are the two components of any connective tissue? Not just blood, but any connective tissue. The two primary components. Not primary. Well, no, not... That's deeper. That's a second level. Every connective tissue that you can think of is made up of two components.
Cells?
Cells is one of them. An extracellular matrix, meaning everything outside of the cells, but still part of the tissue. So in the specific case of blood, what do we call the cellular component? All of them combined. The formed elements, exactly. So that they're not just called cells because one of them is not truly a cell, right? The platelets are formed elements because they are cellular in nature and in origin, but they are not true cells. All the other formed elements are true cells, right? And that includes the erythrocytes, red blood cells, and all, how many types of leukocytes? Five, right. Three granulocytes, eosinophils, neutrophils, and basophils, and two agranulocytes, lymphocytes, and monocytes. Okay. But anyway, on the ABO blood group, what kind of blood cells are we concerned with? Erythrocytes are the ones that have on their plasma membrane what? What do we call those things? Antigens. An antigen, there's all kinds of antigens, not just the ones for blood cells. Antigens can be just about anything, but an antigen refers to a particle that can be recognized by an organism's immune system. What are those things that recognize antigens called? Antibodies. So antibodies are not part of the red blood cells. The antigens are, right? And in the ABO blood group, there's two different kinds of antigens, but that leads to more than two possibilities as far as typing is concerned. What are the two antigens? A and B. No, anti-A and anti-B are antibodies. The antigens themselves are A and B. But there's three different, if you think about this in terms of genetics, there's three different alleles for the blood typing gene. Everyone remember what an allele is? What is an allele? If you say yes, what is an allele? You guys know this. Yes, it is. The way that's more usually stated, you're right about that. But what an allele is a version of a given gene. A gene is a certain gene because it governs a certain characteristic. All right, so remember the difference between characteristic and trait? A characteristic is kind of a category, whereas a trait is something in that category. For instance, eye color is a characteristic, but there's more than just one eye color, right? So any of the individual eye colors, green, blue, those are traits of that one characteristic. Well, a gene is that kind of gene because it governs a characteristic. But there's more than one possible version of that gene. Those are called alleles. So genes correspond to characteristics. Alleles correspond to the traits within that characteristic. And there are three different alleles for the ABO blood group. A diploid organism, which humans are, they're diploid, right? So there's two of every gene, one from each parent. You're going to have two alleles, but there's three possible alleles for each of those two chromosomes that your two genes are on. There's the A, the B, and the O, right? O is an allele that doesn't make any of the antigens. It's just, you can think of it as being defective in a sense. So it doesn't code for a protein successfully. And therefore, if you happen to be an individual with both of your blood typing alleles being the O type, you got an O from your mother and an O from your father, then you're not going to make any antigens in your blood cells of these type, and your red blood cells won't have A's or B's on them. That is a type O, and that's the only way that you can be type O, because type O is recessive to both A and B. The ABO blood group is a classic example, though, of codominance. So the other two possibilities, A and B, are codominant with each other. A is not dominant to B, B is not dominant to A. Therefore, if you happen to have gotten an A from one parent and a B from the other parent, you're both type A and type B at the same time, because they both shine through in terms of dominance. So you have both phenotypes at once. You're just as much a type A as a fully type A person. At the same time, you're just as much a type B as a fully type B person. And that's simply because one allele, when you transcribe that into the messenger RNA, will get translated at the ribosome into the B-type antigen. The other allele will get transcribed and translated into the A-type antigen, and therefore each cell has both kinds. That's a type AB person. But and that's the only way you can become type AB. Well, there's two ways. You get the A from your mother and the B from your father, or vice versa. But the only way is to be heterozygous, one with an A and one with a B. There's two ways, though, to become type A, and there's two ways to become type B. And that's because A is dominant over O, and B is also dominant over O. And so the two ways to become type A is to get both of your alleles from both your parents to be the type A type. And therefore, you just have two duplicate alleles. And the only antigen you're going to make is A. The other possibility of those is to get the A allele from one parent and the O allele from the other parent. The O one just doesn't work, like I said before. It doesn't make any antigen. So you still are only making one type of antigen, type A, and therefore, if you look at the red blood cells, they're indistinguishable from a homozygous type A person. And exactly the same situation for type B. But meanwhile, what's happening in the plasma? The plasma is where we have the antibodies, right? Those are the things. What are antibodies, first of all, chemically speaking? What kind of macromolecule are they? Proteins, which makes perfect sense because antibodies operate based on what? Which is the same answer for all proteins. They operate based on what? Shape, exactly, or conformation, exactly. An antibody is very specific. It will recognize a specific kind of antigen because it has the right shape. But the thing is, you don't want your own antibodies to recognize your own antigens. And that's why a type A person will have type A antigens on the blood cells, but in the plasma will not have anti-A antibodies. That would be bad news. That would be an autoimmune disorder, right? Instead, that person would have anti-B antibodies to recognize invading blood or foreign blood. And conversely, a type B person will have B antigens on the cells and anti-A antibodies in the plasma. So if a type AB person, if you consider a type AB person, both kinds of antigens present on the cells and therefore neither kind of antibody in the plasma, because either kind of antibody would attack an AB cell. For different reasons, but they would still attack the cell, right? An anti-A antibody will attack the A antigens of an AB cell. Anti-B will attack the B antigens of that same cell. Either way, it's going to cause what process? Strictly, it's not clotting, because you're not forming the whole fibrin network. But it's similar to clotting. What is it called? It's clumping together of the cells, but it's not for the purpose of hemostasis, which is stoppage of bleeding. It's because each individual antibody is hanging on to multiple cells at once at their antigens, and that forms a clump of cells. What is that process? That's called agglutination. And that's what is the bad news of transplant errors, right? And so this is why whole blood is not given, right? Unless it's given to a person of exactly the same type. Because whole blood includes antigens on the cells and antibodies in the plasma. If you have an exact match, no problem, because the recipient will have the same antigens on its cells and the same antibodies in its plasma. Now, which one could you give plasma to anyone from? Which type of person can give its plasma to anyone? No. O is the person the only type of person you can give type O plasma to is another type O. Because remember what an O person is, blood cell-wise. The erythrocytes don't have any antigens on them. So to recognize everyone else, the plasma has both anti-A and anti-B antibodies. If you give that plasma to anyone with an A or a B antigen, it's going to agglutinate. Right? So it's AB plasma is the universal donor of plasma. Because that plasma doesn't have either antibody type, and so it doesn't matter what antigens are present in the recipient. There's not going to be an interference. On the other hand, type O people are the universal donor of the cells. Red blood cells from O can be given to anyone because O cells don't have any antigens. So it doesn't matter what kind of antibodies are in the recipient's blood, plasma. They're not going to recognize anything because there's nothing there to recognize on the O cells. Okay? But if you're going to give whole blood, make sure it's a complete match from in both plasma and blood cells. All right, so instead of injuring yourself, we're gonna do this with fake blood, and it's just a matter of following the instructions. Unfortunately, I still don't have a copy of this manual. It's still on its way, so I haven't looked at the pages, but I think it's pretty well laid out. And you have some slides to look at. So, as usual, since we are the last group, there's only two labs in this group because there's so few in the lecture. Anyway, the rest of the class has already done this, so you're the last one of the week. Therefore, whenever we use scopes, put them away before you leave. That's it.